I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today you'll hear designer Orlando Soria's tips for overcoming common decorating hurdles. John confesses what room in our house makes him the most self-conscious, and I share a lighting upgrade that we're loving.
Well, hey there, Sherry.
Hi.
You want to get us into what's new?
Sure. What's new with me is every single light bulb in our house is now an LED. And I'm freakishly excited by this.
Yeah, you are kind of weirdly excited about this. I mean, I am too, but like not to the extent that you are.
I am like a creature of convenience. And I love that now that I've replaced bulbs in our fixtures that are hard to change, like ones with a diffuser, that there's this whole big, like, I don't know, it's like an event. I have to get the chair.
It's quite the production, yeah.
Yes, I have to get the chair and I have to stand on the chair and I have to open the diffuser and hold the little thing so it doesn't shatter to the ground. I have to change one bulb. And this little update has essentially ensured that I don't have to change light bulbs for a very, very long time. Once I put an LED in a fixture, I no longer have to think about that fixture. And I'm very excited because after some pretty decent trial and error, we've discovered the LED bulb that we like that is affordable, you know, relatively speaking. They used to be like $20 a bulb. I buy a 6-pack of them on Amazon for $23. So I guess it breaks down to $3.83 exactly per bulb. And they're by a company called Cree, C-R-E-E. They're a 60-watt equivalent. And this is the most important part. They're soft white. That's
yes,
the color.
That is the most important part to me. This was my big hang up about LEDs for a while. I mean, besides them being a little pricier for a long time, they were also blue. Well, you would put one in and they would have kind of that really blue, they call it daylight sometimes, but I always think it makes a room look very cold. But these Cree bulbs that we found, I feel like finally match what we used to get with some of the older CFLs or incandescent bulbs.
I think the selling feature for us was definitely the convenience, but some of the awesome things that they say on the packaging, which I think goes into the bucket of like, well, that's also very nice, is that they also say that you use 82% less energy than you would with a regular bulb, and you can save a whopping $135 per bulb. So of all the bulbs I've replaced, I like to pretend that millions of Benjamins are just landing in my wallet. I know that's not really happening, but it feels like a smart, efficient change that we've made, and it's also super convenient. So I am psyched about it.
Well, my what's new is much less exciting. In fact, it's a little bit depressing because our garage, as it tends to do, has become a mess again. I don't know what it is about these unfinished spaces like our garage in this house or our basement workshop in the last house. I mean, it is because we do work and DIY in them, but they just, like, we get them clean and organized and then it just gradually falls apart.
It slips away.
And the thing about the garage that is so frustrating and makes me self-conscious is it's kind of like our entryway. Usually when guests come, like with my parents or my family come, they just come through the garage. And so,
yeah, and when we have friends come visit, they're coming through the garage too. And we're like, oh, sorry, it doesn't usually look like
this.
Yeah,
and it just has like scrap wood and some of the tools I don't really have a place for and like a small pile of things we keep meaning to take to donate.
It usually always has like a big piece of cardboard laid out because that's where I'll paint something. So it's like the cardboard is just sitting there with like the last can of paint that I've sealed and left there but haven't quite put away.
And we talked about this a little bit in our last book, because it was our entryway. And we kind of like prettied up one wall, the wall that has the door, and put an organization system in, added some paint and stuff. And so that still looks pretty nice, but that's just like one wall. So I keep feeling like we need to do something, but I don't know. I think it's because it's like unfinished. Like maybe I need drywall in there to provide the motivation to make it feel more put together.
I think what it needs is actually like systems and drop zones. Like right now we have tools that we don't have a place for. There's so many aspects of it that are unfinished, like you said, so drywall would probably aesthetically help, but I feel like we need actual systems of putting things away.
I think we actually have systems. They're just kind of like leftover, like afterthought systems. Like when we redid our laundry room, we saved the cabinet that was in there and we hung that, and that's where all of our paint is. And we have like an old dresser in there that has some of our tools, but everything is kind of like not ideal or the thing I would choose. It's just the thing we had and was convenient and free. Long story short, no one is invited to my garage anytime soon. Our garage, excuse me.
Thank you.
And now we get to move on to the game portion.
Ding, 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 ding.
No, no.
Fine, I'll leave it to the pros.
Okay, so this is the part we like to call What's Not. It's where I quiz Sherry in three different categories where I have a list of things. Most are real, but one is fake. And her job is to tell me what's real and what's not.
I'm ready this time.
You understand the rules.
I'm dusting my shoulders off. No, am I brushing my shoulders off?
I think you brush your shoulders off.
I'm brushing my shoulders off.
Okay, we're starting off as usual with paint colors. This category is called paint colors that are feeling a little frisky.
Ooh.
I'm going to try to put on a seductive voice.
Oh, gosh.
Warning. I hope no one is seduced out there.
Oh, cars. No.
You've been warned. Okay, ready?
Yes.
Number one, divine pleasure.
Ooh.
Number two, seduction.
That's got to be real.
Number three, hot lips.
I think that's real too.
Number four, secret rendezvous.
That one probably could be fake because it's a lot of syllables.
Number five, love note.
Love note's got to be real too. It's like a light pink. I'm going to say secret rendezvous is the fake one.
You, my dear, are incorrect.
Oh, what is it?
Love note is the wrong one.
Oh, I figured that's like a light pink.
It could be, but it's not.
I know. You should name paints, John Petersick. That was good.
Well, thank you. There also was one that almost made the list called Snugglepuss. Okay, are you ready for category number two?
I'm ready, Snugglepuss.
Okay, this one is called How Often Should I Wash This?
Okay. Feel like I'm going to be dead wrong on all of
these.
Yeah,
this might be a dive into your personal hygiene.
Oh, no.
So, coincidentally, I came across two separate articles, one from the website popsugar.com and one from realsimple.com, that were lists about how often you really need to wash certain types of clothing, because they were saying you don't have to wash everything after everywhere.
Right, right, right. Well, if I wash my jeans every day, I would not have jeans to wear because I don't have that many jeans.
Like they, for instance, they said like jeans are more like something you wash every 3 to 4 wears.
Oh, okay. Okay, and then I'm probably doing just fine on that.
You feel less dirty.
Yay.
And like gloves and scarves are something you do 3 to 5 times a season.
Oh, geez. I'm failing at that.
I looked across both of them and I came up with, I've got 5 things that fall in the category of things you should wash after every wear. 4 of them are real. One is one of them you do not have to wash after every wear.
Okay.
You ready?
Got it.
Swimsuits.
I would wash that every time, just from the chlorine.
T-shirts.
I feel like they get sweaty, so you probably should wash them every time.
Pajamas.
If you wanted to be eco and you weren't a hot sleeper, it'd be nice to rewear your pajamas like once or twice. Like sometimes I think about that with the kiddos. That's my questionable one.
Workout clothes.
Oh, definitely every time. Don't be nasty.
And anything white.
Oh, that's hard because anything white is like, well, it probably gets stained, so you have to wash it. But then the other thought I have is I think the more you wash white, it gets yellowed. I feel like they might think pajamas should be every night for like safety, like there's dust mites or whatever.
But there's a lot of talking on this one.
I don't know. I'm between PJs and something white, and I'm going to say PJs.
You are correct.
Yay!
They say pajamas are generally every 3 to 4 wears.
Okay, great.
They qualify all of this by saying, obviously, if something is stained or messy or has a smell, these are general guidelines. It was interesting, though, in the Pop Sugar article, you know, we were talking about jeans being every 3 to 4 wears. They linked to a guy who works for Levi's.
Yeah.
Who says they should be washed once every 6 months.
That's a terrible idea.
And when he washes them, well, no, he is very specific about
this. He must not have children who rub hummus on his leg every day.
Well, then he might make an exception, but he, like, prepares a special bath to soak them and all this stuff. Like he,
and he plays slow jams.
As you would, exactly. Calls him hot lips.
Ooh, there's a callback.
Well, as you would guess, being that he works for a denim company, he is very sensitive about how he treats his denim and generally says that the less you wash it, the better it fits and wears and shapes your body and yada, yada, yada. Ready for your last category?
Ready.
This one is called For the Love of Hildy.
Hildy Santa Tomas?
Yes. People may remember Hildy from Trading Spaces, one of the designers. There was a BuzzFeed article recently that highlighted...
Like greatest hits of Hildy?
I'll put greatest in quotes. So she had some unique rooms.
Right.
And so I have
She was like the reason everyone watched Trading Spaces, though, to see what Hildy did.
I think the most memorable one that everyone knows is where she like glued hay or straw, like real hay and straw onto someone's walls.
Oh, yes. It was like hay stuck into the stucco or the skim coat, and then the homeowners hated it.
Yeah. So anyways, I've got 5. One is fake. So you tell me what's real and what's not.
Okay.
Are these things that Hildy Santo Tomas did on Trading Spaces? 1, she painted a mural of herself in someone's living room.
I know she did a mural of herself, but I feel like it was like in tile.
2, she ripped out the ceiling drywall to create an industrial exposed ductwork vibe. 3, she stapled 7,000 silk flowers to a bathroom wall.
That's gotta be real.
She brought actual sand to fill someone's floor to create a literal oasis.
She did do that. I remember thinking how messy that would be. And now having children, I can't even imagine.
She fastened chairs and a table upside down on the ceiling.
I know she did the chairs upside down. I know she did the sand. I know she stapled the flowers. And I think she painted a mural. So the only thing left is the ductwork. That is not true that she took out the drywall and exposed the ductwork.
Well, you are a Hildy expert. You are correct. She did not rip out the ceiling drywall. At least they didn't in any of these roundups that I saw.
I was thinking, well, she's done crazier. So that was actually a very good plant.
It's something I would do on Trading Spaces. I'd be like, out with the ceiling. I want to see the pipes. Show me the electrical. I'm sure it's up to code. You know what's up now, Sherry?
No.
We get to call someone.
Oh, yeah. We get to call Orlando Soria.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
How are you guys doing?
We're good, great. How are you?
Good.
So, Orlando, let's see if we can rattle off some of the ways people might know you. I'd venture to guess your frequent collaborations with Emily Henderson might top many people's lists, whether it's guest posting on her blog or even back when you were her right-hand man on her HGTV show, Secrets from a Stylist. But you're also the West Coast creative director for Home Polish, which is an internet-based design service and online magazine, and you have your own blog, homemaker.com. And I wanted to check, am I saying that right? Because I know it's home with two M's.
I think that that's a good way to pronounce it. If you tried to pronounce it like in the French way, it probably would just sound ridiculous, like homemaker. Because I knew that that name was always going to be kind of seen and not read because it's a blog. It's more of like a visual joke. But I've had to say it out loud a lot more than I would have expected. So sometimes I'm like, why did I name it that?
You described it as being an inclusive space for male domesticity and for creative men who like to make stuff. Being a guy who likes to make stuff, it obviously struck me. So I just wanted to hear sort of your thought process about why you thought that was important to carve out that kind of space on the internet.
I grew up with things like Martha Stewart and these wonderful female domestic personalities. And there's never been like a male domestic personality. You don't see men doing things in their home. So especially when I started 5 years ago, it was a very like untrodden space. So I wanted to make sure that on my blog, there were images of me doing things inside my house, just to sort of spread the word that men can do things in their homes too. Like I think that there's this stereotype of like, oh, men are like going to be doing the grill or like traditionally masculine things, but men have a space in the home as well. And I think that that is sort of in a way empowering to the feminist message and to just equality in general to be exploring that.
I should point out here that I fold a mean fitted sheet.
Well, please teach me because that is my nightmare. I hate that.
It takes me a lot of time, but I get it there.
I don't believe that there's a way to do it. I just believe that you like crumple it up in the middle and then
yes.
Make the outside look like it's folded.
Here's my tip. Practice with a twin sheet. When you start with a small sheet, it's easier to get the concept. And then you can work your way up to a queen.
You could start a company where you send people small sheets to practice on, but they're just crib sheets. But no one has to know that.
Yeah, look out for my Kickstarter.
That's amazing.
You've done rooms that are bright and bold and others that are soft and tonal. And I love that some are more traditional and others are more modern. So what would you say is helpful to someone who feels like they like a lot of different styles and colors and they just can't choose which way to go with their space?
The first place to start is the architecture of your home. For some people, it'll be obvious. It'll be like, I live in like a mid-century Palm Springs house. For other people, the style of your house might be a little bit more ambiguous. So for them, it's like, well, what direction could I take this house? For me, like you have to sort of honor the architecture of your home in order to create a design that looks sensible. For example, probably my favorite style would be like a Spanish style home or maybe a transitional craftsman style, but I'm in an 80s condo building, so I went with it. If I tried to go against that architecture, it would look sort of false and ridiculous.
Our first two houses were mid-century ranches, and so we got comfortable with sort of the more modern aesthetic, and then we moved into our current house, which is a colonial, and we sort of were like, what do we do?
Yeah, it's taken us some time to kind of figure out how to bring in some more of that traditional.
Well, I think it stretches you in new ways. One perfect example is that we did not think we liked traditional sort of antique rugs. We were in the whole like modern colorful rugs, which really were great in our mid-century modern house. But then when we tried these old Turkish and Persian rugs, we were like, oh my gosh, how have we never tried this? And immediately we're really into it.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing I like to tell people is that a lot of stores will let you borrow things and that paint is just paint. Nothing is insanely permanent. Just don't be so scared of starting that you don't do anything.
Yeah, we always say like not making a choice is making a choice. The choice is your house will always look the same.
Yeah. I mean, and another tip I have for people is if they're having trouble getting started or they don't know what their style is, to just make one decision, like make one foundational decision, buy a sofa, buy a rug, buy a piece of art, and usually that'll help you edit the rest of your decisions. Because it's like, all right, I bought this Moroccan rug, so that'll go with this type of sofa, that'll go with this type of credenza, this type of art. It helps you to just bite the bullet on one thing, and that'll help you hone down the rest of your choices.
So you're good at mixing colors and layering different materials, and nothing ever looks matchy-matchy, but your rooms still feel pulled together and sort of confident in themselves because of that mix. So what's the process that goes through your head when you're deciding what to bring into a space? And how do you keep things playing well together without being like A, too expected, or B, too crazy and chaotic?
The first point you gave was a super important one. It's just mixing materials and making sure like you're bringing in ceramics and metallics and woven elements, rugs, wood, all sorts of different materials to make the space feel more rich, because that's literally how you make a space feel more interesting.
And what about mixing prints?
So this is an interesting one, because if you look at like Kelly Wurstler, like sometimes it's just like a print explosion and it looks insane, but it also looks very intentional. So I think that's the first thing. Like, do you want it to look bold and kind of chaotic in a sense, or do you want it to feel a little bit more calm? A general rule with prints is that you just want to make sure that the scales are different. So if you have a rug that has a large scale pattern, maybe choose a throw that has sort of a smaller scale pattern and pillows that have a medium scale pattern. If you have too many patterns that are the same exact scale next to each other, it looks like a mistake or it looks unintentional. And that kind of gets to another one of my sort of tried points, is that you need to think about like what's going to be the star of your room and what's going to be sort of the palette of your room. So even if you love like 20 different patterns, they might not all be friends and want to be in the same room. So think about, all right, well, I'm going to do this like solid sofa so that I can really allow the pattern of these beautiful pillows to show through, or do a solid sisal rug so that I can do a chair that has a print on it that, you know, is going to be the focal point. I think sometimes people get overwhelmed by like the beauty of so many different things that they can't prioritize them. And so thinking about what the sort of focal priority in your room is also going to help you figure out how to mix patterns. I learned this when I was like 7. My mom let me paint my bathroom and I painted it coral pink and like teal. And I was immediately like, oh my God, we have to paint this back. This looks disgusting. I love both of these colors, but this looks insane. So I think I've always sort of gone for the like bright candy of design and then realized if you don't rein that in, it's not going to look elegant and you're not going to be able to have the sort of focal points or the like emotional moments that you want in your space.
Your Instagram captions are ridiculously entertaining. Listeners, if you take nothing else from this podcast, pause this right now, go follow him on Instagram and come back when you're done laughing. He's at Mr. Orlando Soria. Beyond being entertaining, I always appreciate when people bring levity to design and decorating. Why do you think it's important to have a sense of humor about our homes?
For me, it's mostly just I've been very alienated from the interior design world and that I feel like it's so stuffy and stuck up. And I think a lot of people are intimidated by that. And I never wanted to be part of the like cacophony of voices that is telling people that they're doing things wrong or that, you know, their sofa isn't high end enough, or even that they have to say sofa instead of couch, like that there's like a proper way to talk about interiors. My goal is to just inspire people to create the most beautiful, comfortable space that they can for who they are. So the reason that I like to try and add humor and levity to it is just to let people know, hey, this isn't like a serious alienating thing that's just for other people or just for rich people. It's something that we all get to think about.
I liked your word alienating.
Yeah. And even I, when I go to industry events, I can feel intimidated. Like it's a very intimidating world because traditionally interior design has been for the top 1% of people. And it hasn't been something that has really opened its arms to everybody, which is why I think like companies like Home Polish are so important for sort of democratizing it.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I think the idea of hiring an interior designer feels inaccessible sometimes, especially for DIYers. How would you suggest they evaluate whether working with an interior designer is a good fit?
I think it's if you reach sort of a stalemate with your project and you can't really figure out how to progress, that's like the moment to reach out to an interior designer. Basically, home polish is just like traditional interior design in that we provide in-person personal design services to our clients. We just are a lot more transparent about how much that's going to cost. And we also have a lot of discounts with vendors that we pass on to our clients. It's just a lot less scary to get started with us.
I love that. So to wrap up, we want to play a game with you.
Yes.
We're going to get your opinion on some, picture me doing air quotes here, controversial decorating topics. And it's a game we're calling Orlon Do or Orlon Don't.
Oh my God, I'm stealing this for my blog.
Originally, I was trying to figure out how to play a game that was called Truth Orlando, but I didn't make any sense.
I'm like, well, what's Londo? Like, there's truth or is Londo dare? Is Londo a lie?
Oh my God, I love you guys.
Obviously, these things are subjective, but in just a sentence or two, we'd love for you to tell us your take on these practices. Are they an Orlon Do or an Orlon Don't? So here we go. Rugs over wall-to-wall carpeting.
I think that's an Orlon Do. It depends, you know, like if you're renting and you can't take out the carpet, I think that's totally acceptable. Something to keep in mind is that you just need to make sure that the pile of the carpet is different than the pile of the carpet that you're putting it on. So say you have like a plush carpet that's installed in your apartment, do like a flat woven or a sisal or something that just looks distinctively different than the carpeting below it.
Accent walls.
Orlon Don't. I think that some people can make them work, but it's not my thing.
Open shelves in a kitchen.
Orlon Do, with the caveat that you have to have really beautiful dishes and keep them beautifully styled. Otherwise, Orlon Don't.
Fake plants.
Orlon Don't. I mean, everything has a time and a place, but the purpose of plants is to bring in life and oxygen, and a fake plant just can't do that.
Colorful trim or molding.
Orlon Do, yeah. I think with some thought and some color wheel smarts, like, that sounds cool.
Faux finishes.
In general, Orlon Don't. However, I have seen some done really well that have challenged my opinion on that, but I'd say generally speaking, Orlon Don't.
Curtains and bedding made from exactly the same fabric.
Orlon Don't, but like, I know that I would be obsessed with that if I saw it somewhere, just because it's like kind of badass in a way.
John was like, he's of course going to say no to this. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like sometimes Mary McDonald or someone does it awesome.
Yeah. And there's something kind of funny about it because it's so 80s. And I think that that like 80s excessive kind of so like super froofy interior design is going to come back in like kind of an ironic way. Because like this minimalist sort of white walls, gallery wall situation is probably going to get a little bit played out.
What about theme rooms?
I would say Orlon Do, you know, the purpose of interior design is to make people happy and to make them feel good in their space. And if you're like, I love Star Wars and I want a Star Wars room and that makes you happy, then like, go for it.
Dogs that wear clothes.
Something that I would definitely say is an Orlon Do is the little costumes that make the dogs have little bodies.
Oh yeah, like their front legs are the legs of the person, like a pirate.
Yeah, that should be worn at all times. I think those are so funny.
That's the perfect answer.
Well, that's all we've got for you, Orlando. You did fantastic.
Thank you.
On this installment of Orlon Do or Orlon Don't.
I like any pun that has to do with my name. I don't know why. I'm just easily amused.
And speaking of which, we will put links up to all that you do up on our website at younghouselove.com/podcast. So anyone who's listening who wants to go check out Home Polish or your blog Homemaker or go see your recent tour of the Orcondo on Emily Henderson's site, everyone can find it there.
Thank you.
And don't forget to follow him on Instagram, you guys. You can thank me later.
Bye, John and Sherry. Thank you.
So let's close things up and talk about what we're digging.
What I'm digging this week is my new nail gun. New-ish. I've had it for a little while now. It's the Ryobi Airstrike, which I bought refurbished on Amazon recently after a couple of my friends recommended it. Should I disclaim this is not sponsored? But I do love this thing, so I wanted to share it with everyone because we have blogged about how buying our first nail gun, which was attached to an air compressor, was one of our favorite DIY tools to own because it made so many projects so much faster, from putting molding and trim in to
board and batten.
Yeah, the board and batten to even doing like furniture construction. It has just really sped things up. So this Airstrike nailer, the difference between it and the old nail gun we had is it's not attached to an air compressor.
picture, you know, those like long cords that are corkscrewed, and you'd see it in pictures of us like doing the board and bat, and there's a big compressor that looks like sort of like a vacuum cleaner. And then there's that big cord, and the new one that John got
is like totally cordless.
It just looks sort of like a hand
drill. It looks like it'd be a drill. It operates off of a rechargeable battery. When I sort of decided I was going to make the switch to this, because I mean, the other nail gun worked great, and we actually still use the compressor for some things. Like we used it when we installed the hardwood floors.
Yes.
Because we still needed the air compressor. So I'm glad I have that. But this one is so much quicker because I don't have to take the time to fill up the air compressor, which is a very loud.
It's loud and it takes a little while. There's not the instant gratification of like, bang.
Yeah, exactly. This one, you can just pop the battery in and make sure you've got nails in and go. And when we decided we were going to buy this one, I looked in store, but I also checked Amazon because Ryobi sells them on Amazon and they sell them refurbished. You know, that means it was a used nail gun, but Ryobi has taken it and make sure that it's working and functioning just like a new one would. At least for me, I don't worry about it anymore because I'm still buying it from the manufacturer. And I was able to save $35. So instead of $120 new, I got it for $85.
And you wouldn't know looking at it. Like it looks completely new.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And we bought refurbished stuff before. Like our MacBooks are both refurbished MacBooks. I will point out that doesn't come with the battery. And so a battery is like another, I think about $50.
Right. But we had a battery from another tool.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm very happy with it. It has made our projects a lot quicker when a nailer is involved. So that's what I'm digging. How about you, Sherry? What are you digging?
This week, I am digging a service called Stitch Fix. And no, this is not sponsored. I pay for my Stitch Fix. So basically, it's a mail order service and you pay $20 and they will send you a box of 5 items of clothing. But a stylist picks them after reviewing like your profile. So you give them your measurements and your body type, but you also tell them like what you like and what your style is. You might show them a Pinterest board with some pictures of clothing you like and you tell them what you need. Like I always say, don't send me skinny jeans. Don't send me black blazers. Goodness knows I have enough of those. But I do say like, oh, I might need a dressy top if I'm going out to dinner or like hanging out with the girls. I had a bachelorette party and I needed stuff for that. And the very first box I tried like 6 months ago was awesome. I kept 3 things out of 5.
Wait, so, but how does the payment work?
Well, so it's $20 for the styling fee. But the thing that's nice is they apply that $20 to whatever you buy from the box.
But if you don't buy anything?
No, if you don't buy anything, you eat the $20.
Oh, okay.
But as long as you buy one thing, it feels like there's no styling fee. Because if a shirt is $35, but you paid $20, you just owe $15. But it does up the pressure, I think, in the like, oh, I need to like something or I just wasted $20. But it also saves you lots of time of going to the store and trying things on in the dressing room. And having a stylist pick stuff out does sort of stretch you outside of your comfort zone. And I feel like I try things I wouldn't try in a store, and that's beneficial. So my first box, I bought 3 things out of it, and I thought, wow, I've never walked into a dressing room and tried on 5 things and kept 3. I usually have like a try on 10 by 1. And one of those things was a leather jacket, which I don't think I ever would have bought, but it looks great and I'm happy and my friends like it and they're like, look at you branching out from a black blazer. The second box, I kept 1 thing. But then here's where my love affair with Stitch Fix dries up and shrivels into a raisin. I got 1 box and I liked nothing. And I was like, okay, I'm canceling this. And then Stitch Fix said, we're so sorry. I guess they have like a protocol when you cancel and you don't like anything from the box.
Customer retention program.
Right. They reached out and they don't know anything about me. They're not like, it's a blogger we have to keep. Or I think this is a pretty standard procedure. They said like, we're so sorry you weren't happy with your last fix. Allow us to do the next fix on us. The $20 fee is waived. We'll send you another box. So I was like, oh, that's nice. And I have nothing to lose.
Did that box work?
Nope. That box was a dud.
Oh, okay.
And so ended my Stitch Fix obsession completely. I canceled the service. And then about 6 months went by and I realized basically all the clothes I wear to go out to like nights with the girls or if we do a date night, all the like fun events where I'm not with my children, I want to look nicer. I wear Stitch Fix clothing. And it made me realize like this really has done my closet a service. It has given me a lot more of a range and it's all still black, but it's like a little bit different than just black V-neck, black blazer. So I re-signed up just this month and I got a box just this week and it was great and I kept 3 things. So I'm back on the love train. But you know, some of my friends hate it. Like they've never liked it. They never got a good box. It was a waste of their time. And then some of my friends, whenever the box comes, they love it.
Well, it sounds like a good way to maybe break yourself out of a rut.
Yes.
You need or...
And
like
goodness
you said,
knows I was in a rut, honey. I apologize.
Yes, I love you no matter how black your clothing is.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
If you don't want to miss future episodes, please take a second to subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. We're having a blast making the show, and your downloads, ratings, and enthusiasm definitely help keep us going.
And if you're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or Pinterest, well, we're on them too. Just search for Young House Love to find us.
And if you want to see notes, links, or photos from this episode, just go to younghouselove.com/podcast. This week, you can take a tour of Orlando's condo, aka the Orcondo. Later.
Bye.
Yeah, we're going to give Orlando Soria a ring right now.
Cue Skype. Blah, 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 blah. Pretty sure that sounded just like Skype.